Barhill Records. Der Talk.
Hallo, hier ist Barhill Records, der Talk. Ich stelle in jeder Folge Musikerinnen bzw. Bands vor, die entweder bei meinem Label Barhill Records unter Vertrag stehen oder mit denen ich in meiner Funktion als Musikjournalist gesprochen habe. Zu Gast in Folge 21 von Barhill Records, der Talk ist Allison Ferris, auch Sunny genannt. Sie gründete vor 10 Jahren mit befreundeten Musikerinnen die Band Blackwater Holy Light. Mittlerweile ist sie das einzig verbliebene Gründungsmitglied. Seit 2018 wird sie von Gitarristin Michaela Mayhew und seit 2019 von Schlagzeugerin Elise Dorsey begleitet. In ihren Songs kombinieren sie Doom Metal, Psychedelic Rock und Shoegaze. Ihr 4. Album heißt Not Here, Not Gone und kam über Suicide Squeeze auf den Markt. Viel Spaß mit meinem Gespräch mit Sunny und nicht wundern, ich hatte diesmal einen Knoten in der Zunge und eine akute Wortfindungsstörung. Trotzdem viel Spaß.
Do you want me to call you Allison or Sunny? What do you,
Sunny, yeah. Okay. Thank you for asking.
Who does call you Allison?
My father calls me Allison, and that's about it.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Sunny, you're the only founding member left in the band. So is it also you who calls the shots, or is it like a democratic setup within the band nowadays?
It is. It's a democratic setup for sure. I, you know, because I've kind of been in it for so long, I definitely have been in more of a leadership position throughout the years. And sometimes that's been a lot more than it is. But at this point, you know, me and Michaela and Elise have been doing this together for almost 7 years. We really know each other so well, and we're really, really good at decision making and doing all of the things together. So at this point, we're, you know, very much like a group mind. You know, I kind of can deal with some of the stuff that's like not as fun parts of being in a band, like doing our taxes, which they don't really need it to be there for. But in terms of like making decisions about what's actually happening in the band, like sometimes I'm the point of contact between, you know, our booker or whatever. We definitely make decisions as a group for sure.
I wrote a biography of Blackwater Holy Light for a German service called Munzinger Pop Archive. And there, by researching, I read that you had the idea to form a band after you visited a show of Monolord. So is that true? And how important is that music of Monolord still for you nowadays?
Yeah, we didn't go to a show, but I had discovered their music. And then, you know, from there, kind of done some research on like the label that they were on and stuff like that. I remember being introduced to Monolord from a coworker that at a bar that me and Sarah both used to work at, actually. And our manager at the time was like, "Have you guys heard this band?" And we were like, "No." He put them on while we were working. I was like, "This is awesome." So that's how I had discovered them. But I admittedly don't listen to them as much as I used to. But they're awesome and they're good friends. And we've had the pleasure of going on tour with them a couple times. And me and Mika, the bass player, we send each other pickle memes. We send on Instagram still a lot. So we are bound by pickles, him and I. But they were definitely a really influential band in the beginning of all of this, and for sure would not have, you know, done some of the things that we did without discovering that band. So we owe them a lot, and it's really cool that we've been able to kind of develop personal friendships with them since.
But you first heard Monolord and then you founded the band, or was it vice versa?
Yeah. Okay. No, I heard them before before forming Blackwater, for sure. It was they I won't say they were the reason that I formed Blackwater. At that time, I had been listening to a lot of like heavier kind of like doom and sludge stuff that I wasn't aware of, before all of that. So I was kind of in this place in my life of discovering new music that felt really inspiring and exciting to me, and they were certainly one of them.
I didn't know that pickle memes was a thing. What are pickle memes? I mean, I know what pickles are, but
Yeah, it's just like funny jokes about pickles on the internet because Mika is obsessed with pickles and so am I. And
okay.
so for some reason it's the thing that him and I do. It's our little our ongoing joke that we've had together for like 7 years. It's kind of the most endless joke of all time.
You've started your musical career, so to speak, at the age of six when you were singing in school, right? What made you start singing at the beginning?
I don't know how old I was particularly, but I guess I when I was in middle school is when I had kind of like joined our school choir, which I guess in the States would make me like, I don't know, 11-ish,
Okay.
somewhere in there. I just, yeah, I joined choir because my sister had done it. And so I was like, I guess I'll do it too. And then upon joining, like, really loved it. And I remember loving it really immediately. And it turned into there was like the regular choir that we had in school. And then there was another version that you would go early before school started, and you'd have a separate class that was like before all that. So I was doing both of those. And yeah, I just loved it. I loved singing. I loved doing all of the harmonies. I loved my teacher. I loved the kids that were singing with me. And it was just something that I really discovered, like, oh, I like doing this. I like to sing. And my parents have a funny story about it from when I was really young in the beginning, and we had a performance. My choir had a performance, and so they came, and I had like a solo, so it's like the whole choir singing, and then I walked to the front and I had my little like solo thing, which apparently I didn't tell them I was doing. And so I do it, and my parents are watching, and I like do this thing, and their friend looks at them and says, "Oh, I didn't know that she could sing." And my parents were like, "Me either." We didn't know that either. And so that was like a funny moment for them, just being like, "What? You're doing this whole thing that we had no idea about." But yeah, I mean, I think that like really started my, love for performing and kind of being in front of people and singing with people and doing music with people. I feel like I've had, a bit a deep curiosity about music for as long as I can remember, from when I was a really young child. But that's kind of how all of that, my musical, participation in music really started around elementary school with singing for me.
I guess your sister's older than you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was she a musical influence as well? Like
No,
did
no.
she listen to some stuff that you liked as well, or?
No, like when we were kids, it was like growing up in the early 90s, driving around with like our babysitter. So we're listening to like Nirvana and Alice in Chains and Alanis Morissette and all those things that we're playing. And I remember listening to the radio, and like, it's always a mix of songs, but like I would hear, a Nirvana song, and then, whatever amount of time later, I would hear Nirvana, but it would be a different song. And I was really little, and so I didn't know that it was the same band. But I remember being like, that what I was discovering was tone. What I was getting curious about was tone, because I was like, oh, I hear that this song kind of sounded like this other one, and not having the language as a child to be like, oh, like, those are the same tones, that's the same band. And but I remember being really intrigued by that and noticing that, and it's cool to have that memory because at the time I didn't know what I was curious about. But now, as an adult looking back, I'm like, oh, it was tone. I was noticing tone. I was curious about tone. I was curious about like the gear that they were playing. I was making these realizations about music and about bands that, you know, at the time I had no idea what I was curious about. But it's something that I think is really cool, actually looking back on it. Yeah.
Blackwater Holy Light is a three-piece now. Your keyboardist Sarah is no longer part of the band. Why is that? Why did she leave or whatever happened?
Yeah. So Sarah, she, me and Michaela and Elise, we moved down to Los Angeles in 2021. And Sarah stayed in Portland. She's married. She has a kid. She's currently taking classes to start nursing school. So she's just like in a real kind of different place than the three of us are. And we've managed to, you know, keep the group together and do everything, like go on tour and keep staying a four piece from our move until now. And she's on the record. She played on Not Here, Not Gone. And you know, we had all kind of talked about that being sort of like the last thing that she does with us before we continue on with the band. And then she, you know, can stay in Portland. Like, she just bought a house. You know, she's just really doing mom life. But she has, like, you know, she has other musical projects that she wants to continue doing and dip into, like, while she's staying in Portland. So she's still going to be doing creative things, but can't really like tour the way that she that we have had been in the past. So it's all love. You know, she's just doing her thing, and we got to keep putting one foot in front of the other with the band. So it's just sort of like the natural state of where we're all at in our lives.
As far as I remember, in the past years, you've toured with different lineups, as a four piece, as a five piece, as far as I remember. Why did the touring lineup change from tour to tour?
It really has just kind of been like each album we've had like a couple member changes that sort of influence that. But after COVID, we really wanted to keep going as a five piece after COVID happened, because that's what we had been kind of used to doing. But of course, it was like after COVID. And so it wasn't like, not everyone was like comfortable with touring, or like someone would get sick or whatever. And so we kind of just had started getting into a place where we felt like we could be more malleable with our live performance. And we were playing as a five piece for a while. And then we kind of had to do a tour as a four piece because of COVID related stuff. And then, yeah, we just sort of realized that it's totally possible to perform all of this and play it as a four piece. And, you know, we wrote a lot of it as a four piece. And yeah, it just was like a thing that sort of naturally was like, okay, well, we can sort of just form into whatever we need to do based off of, like, you know, who's available, who wants to be doing it, whatever. You know, Silence Motion, we wrote as a four piece, but we performed it as a five piece, but then we also performed it as a four piece. And so it's just sort of like, you know, not a ton of rhyme or reason. But it just sort of was like, who is in the group, who's feeling comfortable, who is fitting, you know, working with everyone. And, you know, we've had to go through definitely some changes and some shifts and figure out like what works for the members, what works for the group. And you know, naturally, that's just it's going to work for some people, and it's going to not work for some people. And, you know, we all have our own lives and you know, other projects and things that we need to do outside of the band that kind of can determine who is on the road when. So
How important was moving to Los Angeles for your career? Was that like to push your career a little bit more?
yeah, I mean, the move itself, we didn't particularly say like we need to move to Los Angeles for the band. At the time, I was more, you know, living in Portland, where it was really, really dark and rainy and cold a lot of the time, and it just was really starting to affect me mentally for the last handful of years that I had lived there, and I really just needed to be somewhere where the sun was out. And so that was actually the main driver of the move, was being somewhere sunny. But of course, we knew that, like, if we did that, we were going to meet people that we didn't know. We were going to make connections that we didn't have. We were going to get opportunities that wouldn't happen if we stayed in Portland. So it was, of course, like a perk and a part of it. We were like, this feels exciting for the band. But at first, it was really just like, I need to go because I feel like unhealthy living where I'm living, and I need a shift. So, yeah.
But a sunny setting doesn't mean sunny music, isn't it?
Yeah, and people have been asking us about that, and about how living in a warmer place has kind of influenced the songwriting, and stuff like that. And I think that there definitely has been a shift, but it's such a reflection again of like my mental health, our mental health, where I've been. Like, obviously, if I'm not as depressed, I'm not going to be writing as depressing music because I'm not feeling that way. Although, like, of course, you can still write a bunch of sad songs in the sun, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. Your fourth album is called Not Here, Not Gone. Did you try to do anything different compared to your previous records?
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing that I've been talking about the most around this question is really just about the pre-production process that we had with our producer and engineer Sonny Depere, who's worked on so many records. It's crazy. But when we decided we were going to do the album with him, we all went to dinner, and he sat us down one night, and he's just like, okay, I have this whole pre-production process that I like to take my bands through before we record, and it can be a little intense, and it can kind of be long and hard, and but this is how I work. So if you guys are down to do that with me, then let's make the record together. And we had never been in any type of pre-production process whatsoever, so that felt really, really exciting for us. We're like, yeah, let's do it. And so we did. And yeah, he wasn't lying when he said it was going to be hard and long, because he would come in, and we were in our practice space like multiple days for multiple hours every week, and he would have us play a song 10 times, and then he would have us play a song 10 times a little bit faster, and then he would have us play it a little bit slower, and then we would try taking this section and this section and switching them, or we would try taking one of them out, or we would try adding one, or it just every single thing that we could do to just beat these songs to fucking death before we recorded them, we did that. So it was like, yes, the writing process was long, and there was a lot of decision making happening and all of these things, but the pre-production and actually like the way we play them and getting to a point where we could be like, wasted, blindfolded, hanging upside down and still be able to play these songs before we got into the studio, which was the point. He's like, we need to get to a place where you guys can play these songs so seamlessly, so that we have time for all of the fun stuff in the studio, which is like playing around with five different pedals and, making tone and going outside and recording a bird or, whatever. Like, we didn't actually do that, but, just like this stuff where it's like you get to kind of just play around, and it's not just like trying to get the take because you're trying to play it. Like, we could play that album frontwards, backwards, fast, slow, all of those things before we actually got into the studio. And that was a really, really cool process for us with this album that none of us had ever done, especially that intensely before.
You recorded at Sonic Ranch in El Paso in isolation. Did that also have an influences in the way the record sounds? That you didn't that you were not surrounded by your home or your friends, but
Totally,
just that you could focus on the music alone.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, that studio is gorgeous, and it's a very cool place because it forces you to be 100% focused on what you're doing. And that was also a new thing for us. Every record that we've done, we've recorded it, in town, and we've all gone home to our friends or gone out after we record or work or whatever. And this album is just completely focused. And I think that, yes, the environment of where we recorded it played into that, but I think that just the process of a whole, everything that we did, everyone that we worked with, all of the things were a piece of it, the result that we have, it being what it is.
Is there an overarching theme on the album that runs through all the songs, or is it many different topics you talk
It's
about?
different topics, but I think kind of like the overarching theme, for me, I think that the record kind of has different meaning for all of us, and we've made our own meaning out of all of it. But a lot of these songs are about just like big transitions in life, and how some of those are really big and daunting and heartbreaking and sad and full of grief, and there's loss. And then some of those transitions are really light and exciting and uplifting and inspiring and fun. And just the vastness that can happen, of life and transitioning through life. And to me, this record is special because, with that theme in mind, it makes it feel really timeless. Like, someone can listen to it now, and they're going to be going through whatever transition in life they're going to be going through, and they can listen to it in 2 years, and the same thing will be true. Anyone, anywhere, at any time can listen to that and have and to know that that is the theme, and it can connect to them, and they can make their own meaning out of it, and it can become something that is helpful for them, and that becomes theirs as much as it is mine. And that doesn't matter if that's like in when it comes out in January, or if someone's listening to this in 10 years. That's always going to remain true.
Is there a song on the album very special to you, musically, lyrically, emotionally?
Ooh, yeah, I'm all of them. All of them for sure. But I think for me personally, the very last song on the record is called Poppy Fields,
Which
and
was written the last at last.
it was the last song we wrote for the album. We wrote it really fast. It was a song that just boom, came right out of us. And it's the most meaningful to me because first of all, well, it's about my best friend in Los Angeles who lost her house in the fires at the beginning of this year. And I was with her when that happened, and we weren't at the house when it burned down, but I was with her, after. And just like the grief and the wave of just how shocked everyone in LA was that that happened and that it affected so many people. But her story particularly is a heavy one, and it's beautiful. But that song I wrote for her and for her experience, and it just means so much to me because I love her. And because I think that the instrumental part two of that song, if you kind of know the story and you were there, it is so reflective of the experience that we had in those fires. Like, the song starts really slow and kind of creepy. And it's like when we're like, okay, hearing about like these fires are happening, what's going on? This feels really scary. You know, that section kind of builds up as it built up to where our sense of urgency, like, oh, we all need to evacuate, to then the song starts and it's like this really tremolo kind of black metal like guitar that just feels chaotic. Be and because it was chaotic, you know, once everyone was evacuating and all that's happening, it's just like everyone and like people truly running for their lives away from these fires, letting their animals outside to run for their lives. Like it was fucking terrifying for so many people. And the song, the lyrics, the instrumentation, the way that it's the structure, everything is very perfect and intentional and reflective of that experience as a whole, of Gina's experience, of my experience being there for her. It just it's a very intentional song. So it means a lot to me.
I noted that it's a cathartic song. That's what I
Yeah,
think, or what I
totally.
experienced. And it's the longest song on the record.
And it's long. Yeah.
I really enjoyed Spades with this very hard riffing. That's a really cool song, and I also like the incredible riff in Heavy Y combined with the ethereal vocals. I
Yeah,
really enjoy that one.
thank
And
you.
whereas in Bodies, it's the chorus that catches me. And in general, I think the album grows on you, and it takes really time that every song unfolds its beauty. So it's not like you don't get that with the first two listenings, you know. You have to
Yeah.
listen to it quite often.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I agree.
One question to one particular song for the instrumental track Giraffe, positioned in the middle of the album. David Sitek from TV Underground provided the beats, as far as I know. So how come that he is part of this record?
Yeah, Dave, so when we were at the studio, his studio was right next to ours. We recorded in a studio called the Big Blue. And then there was another studio like, you know, 20 feet away from it. And he was in there working. And so he came over and he knocked on our door one day, kind of popped his head in, and he was like, I need a drummer. And I heard your drummer can hit real heavy. And we all just kind of we look at Elise and she's sitting there like, yeah. And you know, he was like, do you think that you could come over and you could record this beat for me, you know, in a couple hours? I need live drums. I don't want it to be drum machine or whatever he was using. So we're like, yeah, of course. So we go over and, you know, Elise kind of sits down and she does this whole thing and it was super fun. And then I told him, I was like, okay, you used our drummer for one of your songs. Now we want to use you on one of our songs. And we had known that we wanted to have kind of like an interlude and wanted something to break up the sides of the record. We just didn't really know what it was yet. And so, you know, I said that kind of joking, but kind of serious. And Dave was like, oh, yeah, of course, like whatever. So we sat down and we just started going through. He was just sort of rapid fire going through all of these beats that he had already had, you know, recorded. And he's like, you want this one? Do you want this one? What about this one? And then he got to that one. And I was like, that's the one. Like, we want that one. He was like, great, take it. So we took it. We went back to our studio. We recorded the guitars over it and everything and kind of like made it ours, trimmed it down, like changed it a little bit. And then we're like, okay, there's our interlude. And so it was just funny because it's something that also connects us to the experience of being at the studio and, you know, the communal vibes that happen once you are there because it's just other musicians. You know, everyone meets each other, everyone's asking each other what they're working on and all these things. So it's the mark of being at that studio and being able to connect with Dave and kind of share members and music with each other. And it was a very unplanned but very special piece of the album.
You mentioned the two sides of the records. Is that just physically on vinyl, or is it also conceptual?
Yeah, kind of both.
Okay.
Unfortunately, just because of the song lengths and the way we wanted to order the songs, we weren't able to break up the record on vinyl exactly how we wanted to, because it didn't, one of the songs didn't fit. You know, everyone, I think anyone that's made an album has run into that problem at some point. But yeah, it is, it's kind of, it kind of conceptually breaks them up too. The first side is a little bit, you know, it starts off kind of like shoegaze. It starts off a little washy and light, so that the listeners know like there are going to be these elements on the record, and there's going to be kind of like lighter, softer songs here. So we'll start off with one of those, kind of ease you in, and then you know the songs build up and they get a little bit heavier towards the middle of the record. And then we have the interlude. And then after the interlude, the songs kind of start to come back down in feeling a little bit, and they get a little bit lighter. It's still heavy emotionally, of course. But they come back down a little bit. And then of course it's like the big kind of finish with Poppy Fields getting really heavy again at the end. So yeah, we wanted to order in a way where it was just sort of like, these are all of the things that we have to offer. And it's like, of course, we could have written a record that was like all the whole thing was really light and really shoegazy and really floaty. We could have written a record that was all big, chunky, crazy riffs the entire time. But it's like, we don't want to write an album where every song sounds the same. We don't want to write an album where you kind of just get this one sort of feeling throughout the whole thing. We want to write an album that is reflective of who we are as individuals and as a group, and all of the vastness of what we go through emotionally and how we reflect that in our music, which is going to be kind of all over the place, you know? So yeah, it was intentional to kind of break it up.
It's better to have a dynamic record than one that's like a flat line, you know, it's
Oh, for
emotionally
sure.
and music wise. Last question. How excited are you to finally present these songs live on tour?
We're so excited to perform them live. We've really been waiting to do it. And one of them, we've been playing Heavy Y. We have been playing live for maybe the last year, I'd say. It's one of the first songs that we had recorded for or written for the record. And we just needed to play something new live. So we've been having that one, but yeah, we're super excited. We've been rehearsing for it, and we're getting some things together for our upcoming tour. But it's going to feel really good and fun for us to be able to play new stuff on stage, because you know, it's like we love all of our old songs, but after you have played them so many times on stage, like you're ready for something new. So we're really excited.
I'm also excited to see you live soon. Sanja,
Yeah.
wish you all the best. Thank you for having time doing this interview.
Of course. Yeah. If
Say
you,
hi to the other two members and stay healthy, and hope to see you in May.
yeah, I, yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the time.
Okay, I appreciate it as well. Bye bye.
Yeah.
Take
Have
care.
a good day.
Das war Bahill Records, der Talk mit Sunny von Blackwater Holy Light. Den Link zu ihrer Band und den zu meinem Label Bahill Records findet ihr in den Show Notes. Das war's für heute. Abonniert den Talk, folgt dem Talk und empfiehlt ihn gerne weiter. Bis dann, ciao.
Bahill Records. Der Talk.